Well, hello. Welcome to Black Men Speak, a podcast that highlights ordinary people doing extraordinary things. I'm your host, Keith Dent. And as we all know, it's Oscar Sunday. And so today we are going we're going to feature Oscar-worthy film at some point in the future. You know, this past year, I went to over the summer, I went to a bike screening. The movie was called The Bike Vessel. And it was, I'm going to show a little trailer in a minute, so I don't want to give it away. But it was a beautifully made film about a man named Donnie Seals Sr. that had open heart surgery before the age of 50. As a result of poor health, diet, things of that nature, which we'll get into. But after purchasing a bicycle, he had a miraculous recovery whereby at one point he was on, I think, 20 medications, and then he whittled it down to one. And so what better way to, as a way to kind of commemorate his journey, he went on a 4-day bike trip with his son. And right now I'm going to show you a clip of that. And then we're going to have a great conversation with Mr. Seals.
This scar right here is from 1995. That was the emergency surgery that they did. This scar is also from 1995. This was my second open heart surgery. This scar here is where they opened my chest. I could always hear my chest pop, like your ankles would pop. The first time that I noticed I had health issues, I was in a meeting and I started getting this flush feeling like I had drank too much coffee.
I still talk to other Black men who still don't trust the healthcare system.
And I remember seeing on one of his notepads, "Am I going to die?"
This is the first time that I've talked about the different things my dad has gone through.
You over there crying, that's not going to help him. So you need to get it together.
We don't have a healthcare system in America. We have a disease detection and management system.
We know that stress actually has a direct impact on heart health. Stress can also come from racism and discrimination.
I saw myself spiraling downhill with my health. I decided to do something about it, and I don't know what made me buy a bicycle, but I bought a bicycle.
We spent more money on this medication than I'm spending on bikes.
We're talking about a one-way trip from St. Louis to Chicago.
I was cursing at Eric during the ride and I said, "Man, how did you come up with this?"
Watch your dog! Watch your dog! Dog! Dog!
My son is always thinking about things that seem impossible.
You shouldn't want to ever cuss your father. I want to cuss my heart now.
Eric asked me early on, "Do I think I'm going to make this trip?" Right now, it's not 100%.
I think he's a living witness that you can turn things around at any time.
My doctor, he said, "Donnie, the disability asked me, when are you going to die? Because you're living beyond their expectations." And they were asking my doctor, why was I still alive?
So, Mr. Seals, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Happy to be here, man.
Great, great. So, and I didn't think about that, this question beforehand, but when looking at it again, when you look at yourself in the beginning of the clip there, is it hard to recognize that was you?
I'm a different person. I've lost a few pounds. Looking back at the picture when I was in corporate America in my office, man, I was like, I think I was like 235 at that time or so. Wow. And I'm a different person today for sure.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. You look fantastic. So, as you know, as I said, it was about this movie, The Bike Vessel, was a way to commemorate what you had been through from a health standpoint. You had open heart surgery before the age of 50, and then you had 3 bypass surgeries. Is that right?
I had open heart surgery before I was 50. I think I was like 43 or so. And I had 3 separate open heart surgeries, and each of those were, is it quintuplets? 5 bypasses, 5 grafts were done each time.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. That's, that is a lot. And so, because of that, how did it feel that your son actually wanted to make the movie to actually showcase that? Cause really I know the bike vessel is about your journey from St. Louis to Chicago, but it was really, really supposed to be about your health journey and how you were using cycling for your health journey. So how did you feel that you were going to make a documentary about it?
We had candid conversations about it. I wasn't on board with it initially. Initially, he started filming because I told his wife that I could hit the tennis ball back to her. And after she embarrassed me, and that was the first time he started filming. And after he embarrassed me and showed me the clips of me trying to play, that is what made me go buy a bike and change the journey. But the film kind of evolved over periods of time. It started out with just filming me going through this journey with my health and cycling. Then the next thing we know, we're filming almost every weekend. And it just kind of evolved from that.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's great. And and so I guess prior to that, you know, your health, you know, and heart issues, what type of athlete, you know, were you?
Oh, man. Back in high school, you know, we're talking back in the 60s and 70s, very active. Football, I was a big fish in a small pond when I played football. I worked on as a running back, defensive back for a D1 school.
Oh, nice.
Realized that I didn't have the speed to be there. I ran track, played baseball. A typical day with us growing up as young kids where we'd play baseball in the morning, go to the pool at 1 o'clock, swim until the pool closed, come back and play baseball until the streetlights came on.
Okay.
My father was an avid baseball player. My uncles were avid baseball players, and so baseball was a big deal in our household. And but football, track, baseball is what I played.
Okay. So in essence, you were pretty athletic, you know, growing up.
Yes. Yeah, I would say so.
Okay. And so then, and that kind of leads to kind of my next question. So you had, you know, like February 6, 1995, which was in the story, you had your first open heart surgery. So looking back, what would you say was the kind of the main cause of the disease? Because you were athletic, you hadn't stated. And so what was it, the main cause that led to the, I guess, downfall health-wise? Or was it the stress of your job? Because you did a great job talking about working at IBM, and I know my dad was in corporate America, and not that he, you know, talked about the stress, and I'm sure you probably didn't to your kids as well, but I'm sure just being in that environment, there were certain things that were stressful and might have added to it. So I'd love to hear that.
To answer what caused it, I think it's a variety of things. One, the job for sure. And when you're under stress, you don't realize that you're under stress necessarily at that time. Raising a family, trying to put food on the table, the physical activity just kind of went was put on the side burner. A typical day for me would be I catch a train downtown Chicago, which is 30 miles away downtown, and I'd go to work and I catch a train back, and that's a 12-hour day. And so I come back, now I have my kids, and helping my wife put food on the table, and spending time with them, which was very, very important to me. Okay. And we see some of that in the film, spending time with them until they're ready to go to bed. And, you know, I get up and do the same thing all over again. Mm-hmm. That stress with the job, along with my eating habits, were off the chain horrible. I'm eating all this junk. I mean, all this processed foods, high fatty foods, a lot of cheese, a lot of pork. I just, my diet was just horrible. So that, along with the stress, I think all led to me having open heart surgery.
Led to that. Okay. And then you, and then in your kind of core friend circle, were you all kind of going through the same thing? Because, you know, kind of in today, you know, of course, we talk about mental health a lot more with our, you know, just in society and then with Black men trying to make sure we seek those things out. But in your friend group, were you kind of going through the same things?
Man, that's funny. When we were going through pictures for Bike Vessel, I'm looking at some of these pictures and my college buddies, two or three of them had died of heart attacks. Yeah, I mean, that's the way we were raised. You know, I spent a lot of time in the South, and breakfast would be fried chicken, catfish, that was one of our big meals. And that's how we ate.
That was breakfast.
Yeah, that was breakfast. And I think of my mom's had probably the best mac and cheese, which, you know, you eat that junk, man, you need to go to the hospital right away. I mean, it's just butter and cheese and but that's what we felt was healthy, and that's what we felt was good food. But I look at my friends, I'm praying for a guy right now that's going through some medical challenges that's in the hospital. I'm praying for him today. He's in the hospital today. So, yeah, it's affected all the people around me and the people that I went to college with. Somebody has someone that they know that's having some sort of heart condition, stroke. And if you think of Terry Mason, he says it's all the same disease. Heart, diabetes, all of that's very prevalent in my core friends.
Right, right. Okay. And so you had a, in the documentary, you had a quote where age and time kind of give you an idea when you're spiraling downhill. When did you, you know, I guess either prior to, or when did you feel like your health started to really spiral to a place where it was, you know, beyond repair?
The tennis match. When I had the tennis match with my daughter-in-law, I realized, okay, this, I hope this analogy works.
Okay.
I felt like a junkie and I hit bottom. I couldn't see myself going any further. I had to make a change. Seeing myself on film was very embarrassing. Even to see it on film today is very embarrassing.
Why is it embarrassing?
I didn't picture myself as that person that I saw on film. I didn't see myself as being that bad from a physical standpoint. Not only the weight, but man, I couldn't breathe during that tennis match. I was at the bottom, and okay, enough's enough. I'm not going out like this. And I literally went and bought a bike the next day.
Mm-hmm. So if I can get this right, so even after the surgeries, you really hadn't made any adjustments on how to, I guess, get better. Is that, do I have that right?
No, I made a lot of adjustments from the very first surgery. After that, I stopped eating beef and pork, but I wasn't doing enough to.
Not physical activity.
I wasn't doing enough physical activity. Okay. I would walk, but I was walking very slow. A lot of that had to do with the medication that I was on. I literally felt, I called myself a sloth. My wife would tease me all the time. I'd move around the house real slow. My heart rate wouldn't get over 110. And a lot of that was the medication. But that medication is what was keeping me going from the conditions that I was in at that time. Mm-hmm. The second surgery happened primarily because the first surgery failed. That's why I had the second surgery. Now, the third surgery, I'm going to contribute that to my not doing enough physically and from my diet standpoint to make the change that I'm seeing today.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I wonder if did your doctors, because I know I would assume you had checkups regularly.
Oh, yeah. I went every 3 months. I was at the doctor for 20 years.
And the doctors didn't stress that you do more physical activity.
No, because I was doing continuous stress tests. And the stress test was required by the disability. I was doing stress tests and a lot of times I couldn't complete the stress test. I didn't go far enough to complete the stress test. Mm-hmm. Hindsight, I think a lot of that was medication. I was on several blood pressure meds. And they prevented my heart rate from getting up. So my heart rate, my body's demanding more oxygen. My heart can't deliver it. And I couldn't go any further. When I started riding, I just kept going. I didn't go further, but I just rode every day, three times a day. And like I just kept going. But Keith, it was a quarter mile.
Yeah, right.
It was a quarter mile. I mean, wow. Literally around the block, and I come back and I'm huffing and puffing. My legs are burning. But I did that three times a day. A month later, I started riding a mile, you know, and it just kept getting longer and longer rides after that.
Okay. So it took you about a month before you could get up to a mile.
Yeah, it did.
Okay. Okay. And so but the fact that you stuck with it is a testament. And I know especially when you have to spend all that money on a bike.
Yeah.
you got to use it.
Well, my wife was not pleased when I think I spent $1,000 on that bike.
And, okay.
She was not pleased. And is this something that you're going to start and stop? And, you know, that conversation. So that was part of the motivation. I'm not giving up on this. I'm going to ride this thing.
What kind did you get? A truck?
No, I got a Cannondale. My first bike was a Cannondale.
Okay.
And
I have a Felt. I had a Felt. Yeah.
Okay. And it served me well. And probably the best thing though, in terms of riding, was when I joined a bike club, because I thought I was riding. I really thought I was a rider because I got up to 8 miles. And I said, I'm going to join a bike club.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Oh, man, was that a rude awakening.
That first ride.
Yeah.
Did they drop you the first time?
No, but the first ride was a very, very slow ride. Okay. It was 8 to 10 miles an hour, but it was 25 miles. And, man, that did a number on me. It really did a number on me. But I kept going. And, you know, next thing I know, I'm doing 10 to 12 mile an hour rides, then 13 to 15 mile an hour rides. And riding further and further each time. So, okay. Yeah, I became hooked. I'm a junkie. I love riding. It's my passion.
Yeah, the first time I joined a club, I think it was 30 miles. And I was like, oh, man. And then they weren't so kind. But they dropped me. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
And
right.
I was like, oh, I guess I got to keep going or I got to turn around and go
home. Find my way home.
Yeah. But, and there is something about riding with a club that, you learn how to draft and things right. of that nature and it's very important. And I wish I could ride more with my club, but the times that they ride sometimes doesn't always.
Yeah. Matter, we got to get you to Chicago, man. Yeah. you got to come to the Windy City. It's flat.
Yeah, it's flat. I mean, that's great too.
but we do have wind.
Oh, well, that's
interesting. We do have wind. That's for
and
sure.
How many bikes do you own? Cause I know I did see you on a, I guess a gravel bike.
Yeah, I have 5 bikes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I have 3 road bikes and a gravel bike and a fat bike.
Oh, yeah, that's the fat bike. So which one do you like the best?
I'm going to say that my latest bike I like the best, but I really like the gravel bike. The Trek that I have is more like a sports car, and a gravel bike is that cushy Cadillac. You know,
okay.
Yeah. So they all have their purpose. Gotcha. Between the gravel and the Trek is the one that's what I like the most.
Okay. Okay. Nice. Nice. So then your son decides to join you, and he buys a bike.
Yes.
And he, I would assume, did he join the club as well?
No. Matter of fact, he's thinking about, I think he's going to join Major Taylor this year just to force himself to get out and ride more. He did not join the club. Most of his riding would be solo on the lakefront. He lives in Chicago.
Okay.
So solo on the lakefront, and he'll come out and ride with me. He was supposed to come out starting last week on Sundays, but his schedule is not allowing that to happen.
Right. And so what gave you the most joy riding with him? And what was probably the most difficult kind of adding him? Because, you know, when you're riding by yourself, it's, you know, you can take your time. You have to worry about anybody else, or you can just kind of go in your zone. But when you're riding with someone else, it's a whole different ball game.
It is a different ball game when you're with someone and you're riding solo. And I love both. That was a time when we started riding that I was able to spend time with him. Just he and I. We're out on the road. We stop at a gas station or in a park and, you know, conversation. Even when we were riding some of the big rides here in Chicago, basically it was the two of us riding together. And we stop and we just being with him was my high. Got to spend a lot of time with him. And I enjoyed that quite a bit. As a matter of fact, I mentioned my granddaughter. I enjoy riding with her. She's 11 years old, and it's the time that I'm spending with her. It is the riding, because with her I'm teaching, but just the time that I spend with her. But being with my son, oh man, it's there's no other person I'd rather ride with.
Oh, okay. And so no real difficulties riding with him? You guys didn't have any challenges or anything like that?
Are you talking about during the training process or period?
Well, just in general, because I know that we'll just cut to the movie. In the movie, you had mentioned, or he had mentioned, how he was a little angry with you.
More than a little angry, and I knew he was at the time, and I gave him his space. That was miscommunication on my part, and if anyone gets a chance to watch the movie, you'll see with the group that I was with, the other guy, we call him Cross. He's one of our coaches. He's also a pastor. He was, I call it, blessing me out because of my activity. But a lot of that was centered around my lack of communication. We were on a ride. Eric is doing majority of the pulling. I'm struggling to stay on his wheel. We come to an intersection, and a blind intersection, and he waves us through. And I'm like, okay. After the intersection, it was a big downhill. I said, okay, this is my chance to keep up with the group a little bit, pick up the pace. And I picked up the pace. I didn't know that he was struggling. So he had a hard time catching us. He caught us where you saw in the movie at the gas station, and he was pissed. Not a big deal to me. That's, you know, not a big deal to me. But that was the beginning of us becoming a true team.
Okay.
Because I realized that I wasn't communicating, and I'm going to put some on him too. He wasn't communicating to me that he was struggling.
Right.
So from that point on, because we did some soul training with just he and I, where we go out and ride centuries. Our training consisted of century metric, and we did that four weeks in a row, century metric training for St. Louis.
Okay.
And we became very, very close. And it was all centered around communication. And you think of any relationship, communication is
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't realize that he was struggling. He didn't know that I was struggling. He thought I left him. But I'm thinking, hey, he's just going to want to come and catch up with me, which he couldn't. And that was the beginning of that. But no, there's no other person I'd rather ride with.
And that's fascinating because did that dynamic or just that instance enhance your communication just in general?
Overall, absolutely. I go back to Eric when Eric is a true athlete. Eric was better than me in football. He played D1 football, ran track. So I spent a lot of time with him growing up playing sports, but it's amazing how cycling just took us to another level. And a part of that, I think he didn't realize my health journey that I was on, and the film showed him some of that. So we became very, very close.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. Because yeah, I mean, an activity such as that, because when you are riding on the bike, there is a lot of downtime, you know, in between, especially since it's flat, where you could probably ride side by side. And
yes, we did a lot of that.
Really get to get to talk. So that's fantastic. We talked about that. So to recognize how far you come in your journey back to health, you decided to, like you said, take the 4-day bike trip. Mm-hmm. And I know it was his idea to do so. Were you excited about the trip at first?
No, not at all. I thought it was a little overreaching for me. And again, he was talking from a production standpoint. He said, let's do it. What did he say initially? Let's do it in 3 days. And I'm like, man, there's no way I'm going to do. We end up doing 386 miles. I think the film says 350.
Right.
We end up doing 386 miles. There's no way I can do that. So I said 5 days. Now I'm negotiating, right? So we came back and we did it in 4. And my hat off to him because he's got a crew that he's paying for. So he wanted to do it in 3 days because of the cost. And I'm saying that's not feasible for me. So we settled on 4 days. And no, I wasn't excited about it. Had reservations up to probably the last week of training. I felt good. I'm saying, okay, I can do this.
And so even though you had the biking experience.
Yes.
Okay. But he, I guess he had more of the, I guess,
you.
And so overall, what would you say was the, because I know you mentioned one day was harder, we get hard. What was the hardest part of the ride? Which day?
Day 3 was the hardest part of the ride. Headwind for over 100 miles. You think when you go on a ride, you got a headwind, let's say going out, and you got a tailwind coming home. Well, we had a headwind for over 100 miles.
Mm.
I'm hesitating because there's one other ride that taxed me also. It's called Horrible Hilly in Wisconsin, where you climb 6,000 feet in 60 miles.
Mm.
That was a tough ride, but the day 3 was by far one of my toughest rides that I've ever done to date. Okay. The headwind for that long was just unreal.
Wow. Okay. And did you finish in the time that you had allotted, or was it much later than you expected?
Oh, if you watch the film, in terms of the flats and stuff, we got a lot of flats on that day, which added to that, where we were 2 hours in the ride and we only went 10 miles, and that's because of the flats that we've gotten. That day was very demoralizing. It was a very, very tough day. But after the third flat, it was like, hey, let's forget about time. Let's just try to get there before it's dark. And that's what we did. It was a tough day.
Right.
Time was not important to us at that time.
And I would assume you started probably about 6-7 o'clock.
We started at 6. That was the day we told the film crew, hey, you guys sleep in. Meet us at this location at 35 miles out. But they had to come out because we got all the flats. They had a lot of the gear that we needed, the equipment that we needed, the tube, the pumps, that's not necessarily seen on film, but they came with all that stuff. And probably also, Keith, that being on the side of that busy road for 45 minutes waiting on them was not fun.
Right. Oh, right. Because, yeah. I mean, and it's so funny to think about. I mean, where we ride, it's much more dense, but you were in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Right. Weeds waist high at the edge of the road.
And, you know, you may be happy to find someone, but you're not necessarily asking them for any help either.
I don't think anybody was going to. I think we were by ourselves. Right. There was not a lot of people who was going to stop and help us.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's true. So I really wanted to go back to your IBM that you talked about in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I found it quite interesting because I guess you had mentioned how you were put on a project that you had to solve, and it from the way you told the story, and you can correct me or address it, that you were kind of the only one that was given this project and it had to be completed by a certain time.
Well, the project was mine and the code wasn't working and I had to repair the code.
You had to repair it. Okay. Right. And so what was what was the overall climate at the time? I would assume based on the picture, you were the only African American in the crew. So what was the climate like for you?
You know, in the film, I try to be politically correct and saying I basically said the racial climate was indicative of our society, American society at that time in the 1970s.
Okay. And it was a kind of late 70s,
right?
Early 80s.
Late 70s. Yeah.
Late 70s. Okay.
No. That picture was taken early 80s,
right?
Okay. But it was indicative of our climate at the time. It was no different. IBM was no different. Corporate America was no different. You talk to anybody in corporate America, it's the same as our society. What you see in our society, you see in corporate America.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I found that interesting. One, because like the early 80s, and I interviewed a couple of weeks ago, and he wrote a book called When Crack is King. And so he was saying in his book that the early 80s, or when President Reagan was actually in office, the middle class was supposed to be, or at that time period, blacks were supposed to be kind of rocketing to the middle class. And we kind of saw a little bit of that in your story because of where you guys had moved to.
Right. But
there were certain... the American dream didn't get to exactly where you were supposed to be. So, how did your kids react to kind of that time period as far as their growth?
I have mixed feelings about that because I put them in an environment that they stood out because of their race and the color of their skin. But the purpose of that was, this is the environment that you're going to work in. So you need to learn how to navigate through this environment. There was a lot of junk going on with my kids educationally. My daughter, very smart, a situation where she didn't get chosen to be on the honors team, you know, where you get honor type classes. And I asked, why didn't she get on the honors team? Because there's people with lower grades on the honors team. And the teacher was basically said she didn't get sponsored. Someone has to sponsor her to be on that team. And she didn't get on the team.
Oh, wow. You
know, so that kind of stuff. I remember Eric playing football. I didn't know it at the time, but the record for that year was so many touchdowns a year. Every time they got inside the 20, Eric came out of the game. I'm like, what's that about?
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah. And he ended up with the most touchdowns. He broke the record. but he broke the record anyway.
He broke it anyway. But he never had to be long runs.
yeah. He broke the record. He broke the record with yardage for the season, all touchdowns, all that. But he never touched the football inside the 20. And the response that I got was, well, we're putting in our power team right now. So a lot of those type situations happen.
Wow.
But here's the positive of that. Donnie and Eric are both in production. And there's a black producer here in the Chicago area. She was doing the Oprah show, and she invited Eric to be a PA at the time. Donnie did some work for her, Donnie Jr. Mm-hmm. And she calls me one day. She said, I can take your kids in any environment, and they're comfortable. I can take them in an all-black environment. I can take them in an all-white environment, and they're very, very comfortable. And I can't do that with a lot of our kids.
Oh, wow.
So that was a real positive for me. And I said, okay, maybe this was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they experienced stuff. And I think they talk about it a little bit in the film. And it's funny, you really start experiencing it when the kids get into dating age, where they start, like, the girls and boys start liking each other. Mm-hmm. When that happens, then race becomes an issue.
Comes an issue. Gotcha. So since the documentary was also about health, what has been, and you've traveled, you know, around the country, what has been the overall feedback you've received from black men, and specifically older black men?
Oh man, it's been off the charts. The reception of the film is really, really, really high, more than I could anticipate. One of the things I told Eric is that if it touches one person, it's worth it. And it's definitely doing that. I'm getting people from the point of, hey, I lost my father. I'm going to do something. I'm going to get on a bike. Just inspiration that I'm, the positive is inspiration that's coming to me, because I'm seeing how they're excited. I said, okay, I need to stay on this bike. I need to stay on my journey. But it's been off the charts, from tears to joy, hugs. Hey, I got to hug you because you remind me of my dad. Those type comments. It's been great. It's just been off the charts. Great.
And have you been surprised by the overall, I guess, health disparities that you've seen, like from some of the, you know, any feedback that the men have given based on, you know, just their interaction with doctors?
Yeah, I think probably the most amazing story I got is a doctor came up to me and talked about him taking his father to the hospital, and his father was a doctor also, by the way, and how they were treated. Now, he didn't go in saying, hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so. But the way that they were treated was amazing to me. It was amazing to me. So it's there, and it has nothing to do with your income or anything like that. But that disparity is definitely there for sure.
Oh, wow. They both went in and they didn't, they just used their names. They didn't say they were doctors.
Right.
They wanted to talk, see how they were going to be treated.
No, they were, his father was definitely ill, was having issues, and was treated very poorly.
Mm.
I mean, they thought they were there searching out drugs.
That's serious.
Yeah, yeah. But it's there. But for me, I look beyond that. Was mine a racial issue? It could be. I don't know. But I wasn't treated how I wanted to be treated, or I felt I should be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept searching until I found the doctors that were good for me.
And how many doctors did you actually have to go through to get comfortable?
You know, surprisingly, not a lot. My first surgery was an emergency surgery, and the doctors I had on that team was not very good for me. So from there, I gathered all my medical records. By the way, folks, those medical records are yours. I gathered all my medical records and I went to Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And Mayo Clinic commented to me, you need to learn everything you can about this disease. They gave me books to read. And I think I was at Mayo for 3 or 4 days. I read the books. And when I came back, I searched out some doctors. And I found this doctor that I wanted to get with, I couldn't get with, but I got with that same team. Okay. And I was very fortunate. And that particular doctor was off the charts, very good.
So what made the first doctor not good for you? I mean, just for anybody that may be listening. What
was almost going to be cursed. Yeah. Oh, well, he didn't care about me.
Oh, he didn't care. Okay.
He didn't care about me. I went back and said, hey, I'm having some issues since the surgery, and I'm having pain here. This is going on here. And it was like, the comment literally was, we opened you up like a chicken. What do you expect? That was a comment that was made.
Mm.
But I knew they kept saying it was post-surgical pain. And I'm saying, no, this spider going up the side of my neck to the top of my head is not so post-surgical pain. I just get these weird sensations throughout my body. And it ended up being cardiovascular. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, okay. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So in essence, if there's something that you're feeling in your body, don't just take it as normal. You need to
Here's something that most people don't realize. I never had a heart attack. Never had a heart attack. Felt funny, went to the doctor. And a lot of black men don't do that.
I know the first instance you were playing, you in the documentary, you were playing golf, you didn't actually have a heart attack at that time.
No, I did not. The instance that made me go to the doctor was when I was in a board meeting. I just got promoted, and I just felt like I drank too much coffee. I was real jittery, and just like, what's going on? And I say, guys, let's take a break. And then I end up going to the emergency room, and 2 days later or the next day, I end up having open heart surgery.
Wow. But at least you were able to do that. And because, most people will avoid. It was okay. The pain goes away, and then I'm good now.
Yeah. And you say pain goes away. It wasn't necessarily pain. It was just, I felt weird. I felt unusual. This is not right. Something's going on. And I needed to find out what was going on.
Okay.
I didn't have chest pains and stuff like that. I didn't have that.
Right. And so let's get to the fact that you changed your diet.
Yes.
Because once you got sick and had to change your diet, your whole family, I guess, went in and started to change their diet as well.
Yes, they did.
But then you, and I think your wife mentioned where there was some pushback from family members.
Oh, yeah.
The changes of your diet. And why do you feel... I mean, especially with today and technology and the internet, and there's so many, I guess, stories about making the changes in your diet. Why do you feel there was such a pushback from your family?
Not only my wife's family, but my family, my mother, my father, my sisters. My view is that food was, the stuff that they were eating was just too important to them. They weren't going to give up their pork sausage and their highly fat foods. They weren't giving that up. And it was a definite pushback to the point when I would go there, they would be insulted that I'm not going to eat the pork and I'm not going to eat the neck bones and so forth. And in the black community, I think food is... how do I want to say this, Keith? I don't know how to say it.
What, food is life?
Yeah, it's life. It's very, very important in a relationship and how we interact. And if you look at in the film, those Christmas and Thanksgiving dinners,
right,
all that food, highly fat, unhealthy food, highly seasoned food. It's amazing that we ate that stuff and still able to live. But yeah, it was definitely pushback, not just for me, from my family, but my wife's family.
And, I guess since the documentary and then after them seeing it, have they made changes or are they still fighting it?
That's sad to say. All those people are gone. They're not here anymore. They're gone. My sister passed a couple years ago, and that was part of the documentary in the film. She passed diabetic on dialysis, grossly overweight, water retention, basically what took her out. And so all those people are gone. So I don't know what else to say about that. On my side, on my wife's side, there's still some people here that are realizing that their weight and lack of movement is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, sorry to hear that. But it's just a, you know, it's a testament of, you know, of the food and the type of food and the changes that we need to make. And so, and I think I have the answer, but I just also thought it was quite interesting and funny where in the movie you guys had to actually stop at a McDonald's. So I was thinking, I was like, well, why McDonald's? Why not Subway or, you know?
So think of that. I'm glad he put that in there for a couple of reasons. One, we were in a food desert, as a lot of Black folks are in some of our neighborhoods. They don't have a lot of choices where to go eat. Mm. We didn't have a choice. We didn't do Subway because there was no Subway there. But we had been eating subs from a gas station called Casey's.
Okay.
And so we were tired of those. But at this particular stop, it was like a little food court. So you had McDonald's and Taco Bell. That was our choice. And I chose McDonald's baked chicken with fries. That's the first time I've been to McDonald's in over 20 years.
Wow.
But we didn't have a choice. So think of our neighborhoods. A lot of those people don't have choices where to go get something decent to eat. So we were in a food desert. And I'm very happy that he put that in there because we didn't have a choice. And you know what? Out of all the screenings that we've had, you're the second person to ask, why McDonald's?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that was obvious. I was like, wait, you just talked about a healthy diet and then you went to McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fascinating. But at least you didn't choose Taco Bell.
Yeah.
That probably would have been much worse.
Yeah. Grilled chicken. And I forgot what Eric had.
But it did taste good, though, didn't it?
Man, when you were on a ride, I think anything would have been tasting good around that time.
Yeah. So you mentioned towards the end of the ride that there might not be another adventure. So have you stuck to that? Or do you think you may do it again?
Yeah, we're definitely going to do another ride. I'm in conversations with Eric right now. Matter of fact, I'm supposed to get something to him today about our next ride. We're planning on something around 400, 500 mile range. No cameras, just he and I. And I'm looking forward to that. I want to do a ride in Jamaica. He filmed in South Africa and he's saying there's a course there that he wants to ride. I don't know if we'll do anything that elaborate this year, but we're definitely going to do another ride 400 miles plus where we
I think Jamaica, they have a tour.
Yes.
500. Okay.
Yeah. It's a 3-4 day tour. And it's twice a year that they have.
Right. Yeah. Cause I've seen that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about that, not this year, but down the road, along with he wants to do South Africa. But hey, we got bike cases. We're ready to travel. We're going to do some traveling with the bike vessel tour that we're dealing with right now.
Okay.
And man, I'm excited about riding. I'm excited about riding with him.
That's great.
That's one of the times I get to spend time with him.
Fantastic. So if there was someone that was, you know, they watched the movie and people probably asked you, what do I need to do to get started into riding? Or what are kind of three things that you would tell someone to do before they got started?
You know, it's funny because people will say, hey, Donnie, I like what you're doing, but I can't do what you do. And I'm saying, don't do what I do. find something that you love and do it. Anything that you love and do it. Anything that's going to get you moving. If you enjoy it, you'll continue doing it. I love cycling. If I don't cycle for 2 days, I got to go. I'm either on my trainer or outside. I got to cycle. But what you need to do is you don't have to have, well, let me tell you what you don't need. You don't have to have a very expensive bike. You just need to find a bike that you can get on and ride. You need to find a place that you can go ride. And if you're fortunate enough to have some people that support you, get around some people that support you, we ride on Sundays here in Chicago. The place is called an Arboretum, very hilly, relatively hilly for Illinois. And it's a 8 mile loop. And we just ride this loop. And there was this lady out there, more than a little overweight on her first ride. And the encouragement that she got just from being out there, and she's coming back. You know, she'll just find, it doesn't have to be cycling. I mean, it could be pickleball. It could be anything that you enjoy, find it and do it. And you just got to move. And again, if you enjoy it, you're going to continue. Find your vessel. Mm-hmm. I found mine. Find your vessel.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I like that you fact that you said that, because I especially now, hold on. I find myself wanting to ride not the same route all the time.
Right.
But maybe if, you know, because there's a route that I could ride regularly, you know, I should probably ride that more often, just to make sure I get out and ride at least 3 times a week. And I'll especially now, because it's a little colder, we're probably in the same geography. It's just cold right now. So I ride indoors more, but just to start to ride a little bit more regularly. But that sounds great. And I know you said, oh, I should get out to Chicago. I may have to get out there.
You got to come out, man. You got to come out.
Ladder, you know.
Hey, check out the Major Taylor ride, man. I think there's a couple other brothers that's coming out. So out the Major Taylor ride.
That's great stuff. And,
I think it's June. It's June.
Okay. And so the last question I have for you is, you know, I always ask this of my guest, our guest. So I know you've been the stalwart of your family, you know, and I applaud you for all that you've done, especially, you know, with health challenges, making the changes that you need to make. So you could be around to ride with your granddaughter. So,
yes.
But one of the things I always ask right now, kind of in this basically state that you're in, how are you feeling, you know, as a Black man?
From a physical standpoint, or
just in general.
Blessed. I guess the best way to put it is I feel blessed. I ask and I pray about, my wife told me to stop asking this question. Why am I here? Because I didn't have to be here. I did flatline and they were able to bring me back. I feel blessed. I feel healthy. I rode my gravel bike last week. I'm going to ride it again tomorrow, same route. And just to be out in the woods on this gravel track and being able to turn those pedals, man, what a blessing. The statement that health is wealth, I firmly believe that. If you have your health, you're good. And I have mine. I have a loving family. From a mental standpoint, I'm doing great. A lot of that is centered around my activity. I not only ride, but I play pickleball. And man, I fell in love with that. I'm just happy being active. I want to be there to see my granddaughter's kids. That's where I want to be. Eric just had a son. He's 1 year old. Spending time with him. Matter of fact, at the end of the film, his wife, Natalie, was pregnant with, she beat me, and she was 6 months pregnant, and she beat me in tennis. and that's after I got in shape. But I'm blessed. Just seeing my family, my grandkids. I keep mentioning the joy of just being with my granddaughter riding, and the athlete in our family is my middle granddaughter, who's 8. She's very, very athletic. So just being around my kids and my family, I'm blessed.
Well, that's great. And Donnie Seals Sr., thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. For those of you, try to, wherever you can, if there's a film festival that's showing The Bike Vessel, make sure you check it out because it was a great film. And you guys did a great job. And I look forward to your whatever future endeavors you guys have. You know, if you, of course, hit me up. If you're on the East Coast, let me know. I definitely would love to ride with you guys.
Okay. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
This is Black Men Speak. We just thank you for joining today. Please, hey, if you like, please share and subscribe. And look for this a couple weeks on the podcast if you missed today's show.